Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we'll be doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on April 24th, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. You might be able to hear a lawnmower in the background. And just so you know, some of this information in the podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. Also, just so you know, you probably already noticed, this is a huge episode. We delve deeper into the data that has loosened some state restrictions, details from the first meeting of Accelerate SC, reaction from people at the Statehouse protest, how prisons are handling this, and so much more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Again, leave us your name, a one-minute long voicemail, and what's going on in your world at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 appears to be plateauing, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 157 deaths, and currently there are 5,070 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of April 24th at 5:39 p.m. So, like it's been said, we're plateauing. It took us a week to go from 3,000 to 4,000 cases, and again, it's taken us a week to go from 4,000 to 5,000 cases. So just something to consider while we look at these numbers. The first meeting of the governor's COVID-19 task force aimed at jumpstarting the economy met on Thursday. It was a surreal sight at the USC Alumni Center, where around 29 members representing medical, education, and industry, as well as several lawmakers, sat at individual tables spaced out around a massive ballroom in an open-ended square configuration. At the front of the room sat Governor Henry McMaster, Accelerate SC Director James Burns, and Lieutenant Governor Pam Evatt. Accelerate SC is tasked with figuring out how to effectively get the state back on track and safely maintain growth through the choppy future. I sat spaced out in the back with other members of the media. I wore a face mask, and I'd say a handful of participants did as well, even though each was provided a surgical mask. But it's worth noting we were sitting in a well-ventilated room for more than 2 hours. Commerce Secretary Bobby Hitt gave a direct overview of the situation and what the future is going to look like.
We're also focusing on identifying industry sectors and communities most harmed by this, who may not come back or may not come back at the same level, and then determine how to best help them, as well as their employees, in terms of looking at how we marshal our efforts in workforce development to make sure we can move people around who are available and wanting to work as new things start to change. There will be change. When the governor and I were together the other day, we both knew that we're looking at a new normal. We don't know exactly what it is, and that's what this group has got to help us figure out. We know there's a new normal, and the new normal is going to be lead South Carolina to, I hope, greater levels. But things are going to change.
State Superintendent of Education Molly Spearman, fresh off the announcement with Governor McMaster to keep schools closed for the school year, said overall the transition to the new normal, which has been 30% of the school year shifting to online or to paper and pen packets, has been met with 83% of teachers saying that they have enough to work with. But her report also had some stark new details about the challenges school and home life has posed.
There's an issue called summer slide, and that's something we deal with in South Carolina all the time, because about 62% of our student population lives in poverty. Did you know that? 62% of our students down. That's the poverty index that we use, SNAP, free and reduced lunch, all the different criteria. So we worry about those children anyway. And had it been a normal year, they probably would have finished a little behind. And then we know that because they were going to be out of school for 3 months, that they were going to probably summer slide, lose 3 to 4 months of the learning that they had done during the school year. So put that slide on top of the fact that they've been out of school 30% this year, and then add that to what's going to happen in August. We got a problem, and it's a major problem, and I need your help. Our teachers are out there. We're working, and they're being creative. But we know there's nothing like that face-to-face relationship with a teacher and a child, and how can we get back in school in August and make that happen and do it safely?
Spearman's presentation contrasted with the consumer confidence concerns and economic uncertainty the group is attempting to navigate, with direct pleas for what is needed to ensure students, who are the up-and-coming workforce, if you want to get capitalistic with it, make sure that they succeed.
It's not just Allendale. It's not just Northern Saluda County, where I live. It's all over. So I need your help. This is out of my realm. We don't have all the money to do this, but the creative minds in this room, I think we can make this happen, and I really need your help if we're going to be able to offer digital learning to all students in South Carolina, and not just learning, but telehealth, telemental health, where we're giving psychiatric sessions with students at their homes if they've got the technology.
After the meeting, the press gaggled with the governor, and he was asked about the protest to reopen the state that was set to happen the next day at the State House.
This is America. Yeah, everybody has a right of assembly, a freedom of speech, and we welcome anybody who wants to say anything to come on out and say it. We might learn something from them.
Colleen Wheeler, who was hanging out the side of a relatively new GMC Sierra pickup truck with an American flag on Friday, and she shared her opinion on the situation. And just so you know, there's a lot of horn honking here.
So tell me why you're here today, Colleen.
We're here. We want South Carolina to be open. We want our freedom back. We want to be able to do business and go back to work.
What do you think's not open right now that needs to be reopened?
Restaurants, in dining restaurants, wedding professionals. They need to get back to work, produce weddings.
And what do you do? How have you been affected by this?
I can't work. I have no money. And it's just, it's drying up, and we need to get back to work. The cure for getting back to work is for this, you know, to get back to work, basically. We just need to get back to work.
Are you worried about like people dying as a result of that, or what are your thoughts about how this might spread?
No, this is, the numbers don't add up. They just simply don't add up.
So you're willing to risk your life on other people's lives?
I'm not afraid. We don't need to be afraid in South Carolina. Our numbers are very low. Get back to work. We can all, you know, work together to make sure that it doesn't spread, but we need to get back to work.
In the few moments we had until the light at Main and Gervais, directly across from the State House, turned green, she gave her evaluation of the governor and the virus.
Do you think the governor's doing a good job? How would you rank the governor's job right now?
Good so far, as long as he keeps opening and doesn't let other people try to persuade him not to. So we just need to get back to work.
Do you think that this disease is a hoax at all, or do you think it's...
No, it's not a hoax, but we can handle it.
Gotcha.
We can handle this.
Wheeler was some of 200 or so people in vehicles circling the State House, honking their horns on Friday, along with a smattering of others on the State House grounds. Her sentiments were shared by a lot of folks, though their beliefs varied. One woman jumped out of the passenger side of a GMC van with an American flag to get in the background of a TV reporter doing a live hit on Main Street. The state's John Monk was talking with me when this happened, and we went over to talk with her.
Our freedom is essential. Our right to work is essential. Our right to quality health is essential.
I asked her if she was worried that opening such places could lead to infections and deaths, and she answered while getting back into her van when the light turned green.
Do you believe in opening restaurants and mass gatherings?
I believe letting people do what they choose to want to do. But I'm concerned about forced vaccinations and mandatory eventual microchipping and say no to Bill Gates and the WHO. Bye.
Bye.
Like Trudy, nearly all the protesters I spoke with had concerns about any future vaccines.
Just about South Carolina, it's about Michigan and other states where people are being terribly oppressed. This is not helping us. This is hurting us. President Trump, we love you, but it's time that you get people around you who are going to support the economy and to support America as it should be.
Ma'am, what's your name and where are you from?
Mary Toko. I'm from South Carolina, Charleston, and I believe that what is going on here is oppression.
What do you want to see open? What's the problem that you think is happening?
I think everyone should be open. I'm all about herd immunity. This is not going to benefit us. There are experts that are divided out there, and the scientific community are completely divided on what's going on, and I believe that herd immunity is far more important than what we have going on here today.
So do you think it's worth risking lives to get that herd immunity?
I believe that people who are immune compromised should quarantine, but I believe people like myself and people who know how to promote their health should be able to go on about life. Herd immunity is a real benefit.
it's interesting that this came up because I asked Dr. Brandon Traxler about COVID-19 herd immunity on This Week in South Carolina this week, and here's what she had to say.
Four other of the seven total coronaviruses that can infect humans cause just the common cold. As we all know, we get those repeatedly mm-hmm. throughout our life. Getting those doesn't protect you from getting it again in the future. So I think that we are prepared that this virus might be of that sort, but certainly it would be great if it did provide some lasting immunity.
And all of this was isolated to a small portion, a 2-block radius around the State House, essentially. Lawmakers weren't there, and neither was the governor. And some people think the media is hyping this, and I say the actual press, the working press, not pundits sitting at a news desk making assumptions from afar and passing them off as facts as if they were there. I'm talking about the real press. I'm talking about our press corps in the state that covers events important to a community's dialogue. Whether you agree or disagree, we're there to present the information for you. Me and other cameramen were not out there conspiring on the best ways to make things look bigger or smaller, or only talk with one person instead of several. You heard me ask questions, you heard their answers, and you saw some of my photos on Twitter. And I also spoke with two counter-protesters that I'm going to include in a moment, but let me finish. People's opinions vary, camera angles vary, but if you're a discerning news consumer, you can make your own deductions based on what's been presented to you as objectively as possible. Now, I'll confess, looking back, I spoke to more women than men. But you know what? I don't see that being a factor in this debate because it wasn't any gender-based issue here. It's Americans talking about their concerns. And for balance, I did speak with two of the three counter-protesters that I spotted. One was standing on the State House side of Gervais Street, shrouded in black, holding a neon pink poster that read, "See you soon, death." From behind a face mask and her black shroud that obscured her face, Delilah, that's the only name she gave me, told me why she was counter-protesting.
My mother's a nurse. My sister's a nurse. My sister has two kids. We're out here because we don't want things to happen out earlier because we're scared. It'll kill people. I'm with nurses. It'll kill people. I don't want it to hurt them.
She was joined with Dee Nix of Lexington, who said she's a registered nurse in a COVID-19 unit at a local hospital. Wearing scrubs and a face mask, Dee wouldn't say which hospital, but gave me some details on her current work situation.
People get sick and they crash very quickly. And people can seem well and have decent oxygenation levels and 3 hours later be on a ventilator and just a couple of hours after that be deceased. It moves very quickly.
And what about, are you getting enough PPE or do you think nurses are getting enough PPE?
I am where I work. I can't speak to other places, but the COVID unit is very well stocked. And I know that the primary hospitals that are taking care of those patients in this state are pretty well stocked as well.
And just to wrap it up, remember last episode when we talked about Georgia Republican Governor Brian Kemp getting dinged from Senator Lindsey Graham on reopening too soon? Well, others jumped in this week as well, including President Donald Trump, who told Kemp, quote, that I disagree strongly with his decision to reopen certain facilities which are in violation of the Phase 1 guidelines, quote. On Thursday, we asked Governor McMaster about his thoughts on his neighboring governor reopening too soon. Here's what he had to say.
It sounded like he disagreed with what the governor of Georgia did, who is doing what he thinks is best based on the advice and the information that he has. We see it a little differently here, but I imagine every state is going to see it a little differently. But we're going to get information, advice, guidance from the very talented people that were in this room today, as well as some different groups that are forming in cities and certain professions to figure out the best thing, the details of what we need to do, how to get South Carolina back to work strong to regain our competitive advantages that we had when the virus came along.
And on Friday, the president signed the $484 billion relief bill the U.S. House of Representatives passed on Thursday. It will send hundreds of billions of dollars to small businesses since the previous Paycheck Protection Program ran out of money in 12 days. Several large, publicly traded companies gobbled up hundreds of millions of dollars meant for cash-strapped businesses. If you can hear my neighbor's leaf blower, then you know it's time for some economic news. However, this is some more unfortunate economic news, as it seems to be more and more these days. In the week ending April 18th, 73,116 South Carolinians filed an initial claim for unemployment insurance benefits, according to the State Department of Employment and Workforce. Now, this is a decrease of 14,570 initial claims from the week prior. It's the first decrease we've recorded in initial claims since the COVID-19 pandemic began in March. However, despite the weekly decrease, the total claims for the past 5 weeks total 341,730 South Carolinians, which is about 14% of the state's workforce. DOE Executive Director Dan Alezzi said the agency has staffed up its call centers by some 900% to handle the surge. It also had a fully funded unemployment trust fund of $1.1 billion before the pandemic, which is better than some other states. After shelling out up to $900 a week per claimant, funding and getting people back to work are concerns that he expressed Thursday at the Accelerate SC meeting.
Challenges, what are the challenges that we face? Well, one of them is what we call recall resistance. And you see my example there. Employee earns $15 an hour, that's $600 a week. He's laid off, and now he's drawing unemployment benefits of about $600 a week, and he's getting a $600 supplement to add up to $900 a week. Now, so when I call John and say, John, come on back to work, John's going to say, well, why don't you ask Jim? I'd like to stay out for a while. So we're going to have issues with that. Employers are already addressing it. The law is crystal clear. We've got it on our website. We've got forms for you to use. If you make an offer of recall and someone refuses it, you should notify us. We will investigate why I did it. If you didn't have a good reason, we will stop it.
And rough math shows that the trust fund at current rates will expire in some 14 weeks. You can expect lawmakers to be back before then to address the funding issue, among other things. The focus this week has been on the gradual reopening of the economy and whether medical professionals are in sync with the politicians steering the ship. You heard the situation play out in my beach reopening piece last episode, and I had the opportunity to speak with DHEC Dr. Brandon Trexler on This Week in South Carolina, where we touched on what the data is showing us. Here's what she said.
We are cautiously optimistic that we have passed sort of the high point or the peak, but rather than seeing necessarily a sharp decrease, we are seeing, though, that flattening of the curve, that plateauing or leveling off, which, for the daily case counts, which is cautiously optimistic, and so hopefully that will continue and eventually decrease down further. People have done a great job. I'm so proud of my fellow South Carolinians and how well they've done to flatten this curve, but this isn't the time then to relax and forget thinking about social distancing. We absolutely need to keep doing what we've been doing in regards to that.
Mm-hmm. So is the case count more important when we're looking at how to do some of these things versus the daily death rate, or how do we juggle both of those sobering statistics?
Sure. They both are, very, very sobering. We keep reminding folks that while we're looking at numbers and data, they do reflect people. All of these numbers reflect somebody's loved one. The case counts will go ahead of the deaths often. You'll see a little bit of a lag time in the curve for the daily deaths. So we are seeing what we would expect, which is that flattening of the curve for the daily case counts, with predictably then the peak and the flattening occurring several days to even up to a week or so, a couple weeks later for the death counts. That just reflects people are diagnosed, and deaths, usually don't always occur immediately when the person's diagnosed.
And what are we hearing in terms of testing? I mean, again, a lot of people keep talking about how if we want to open up the economy to back where we were, we need widespread testing, we need more testing availability. What's the strategy right now for DHEC to try and implement a testing strategy so that we can reopen more and more of these businesses and people can get back to work instead of working from home?
Absolutely. We certainly, testing is going to be one of the key things that need to be going on to safely go back into our new normal. Our strategy for testing is to continue to encourage folks that are symptomatic, encourage providers that have patients who are symptomatic to and meet some of those criteria for recommended symptoms and whatnot to go ahead and get them tested. We have capacity at our public health laboratory. We have no backlog and haven't had a backlog for a couple of weeks at least. We're doing some extra outreach to even some of the underserved areas to try to encourage and assist with testing of symptomatic people. We're still not recommending this testing be done for people who don't have symptoms, who are asymptomatic. the current kind of gold standard test is one that's basically a snapshot in time. It tells you at that moment if you're infected or not, but it doesn't tell you what your risk is of becoming infected the next day, for example. The other type of test that people are hearing about are these antibody tests. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of limitations with those tests currently. The main thing being we don't know if it shows that you've had a prior infection, we don't know if that protects you from reinfection.
You can check out the entire interview on This Week in South Carolina, which re-airs on SCETV this Sunday at 11:30 a.m. You can also see it online at scetv.org/TWISC. And what happens if COVID-19 begins to spread in state prisons? Scott Morgan with South Carolina Public Radio has this report on what's being done to prevent that nightmare scenario in light of recent infections.
Prison inmates and workers don't get much of a choice about social distancing. And the very fact that they're confined in exactly the kind of petri dish that the coronavirus thrives in could theoretically be the making of a catastrophe. But so far, South Carolina's correctional system has managed to skirt the high infection rates plaguing states like Ohio and Mississippi. Brian Sterling, director of the South Carolina Department of Corrections.
There's three staff members at Kirkland who have tested positive for the coronavirus. Overall, we've had 35 folks test positive.
For perspective, the SCDC employs about 5,000 people and oversees about 17,800 inmates. 23 inmates have been tested for the coronavirus. One, a 69-year-old man at Kirkland Correctional with pre-existing health conditions, has tested positive. As of this report, he's in the hospital. SCDC has also had one death, a guard at Lee Correctional. His family has requested that he not be further identified.
He did pass from COVID. Not sure if he got it at Lee or not. I don't think so, but we'll find out later, I think, once the tracing is done.
The tracing Sterling just mentioned is contact tracing, a kind of reverse engineering process that follows the steps back towards where a person with COVID-19 most likely came into contact with it. So far, contact tracing has swiftly led to the world outside of the prisons. The only way for the coronavirus to find its way inside, in other words, would be if someone who worked at a facility brought it in. But the protocols to get inside are so strict that the director himself has to go through a screening process every time he shows up for work.
I fill out a form around anybody that's tested positive. Have I traveled to any hot spots? Do I feel sick? Things of that nature. And then my temperature is taken and I sign a form and I am let in if I don't have a temperature. We do that at every institution.
Inside the prisons, inmates are largely self-isolated, and there's a lot of attention paid to cleanliness.
We clean every 2 hours, common areas, doorknobs, handrails. The inmates clean their cells and things of that nature. We've given the folks that are incarcerated two masks. They can wash one and wear one, and we're requiring them to wear the masks if they're out unless they have an underlying condition. You know, obviously work with them if that inhibits their breathing in any way.
Sterling says the inmates are handling the situation pretty well. Other than the masks and the cleaning, the days have not really changed that much for them. And ironic as it might sound, the very thing that puts these inmates at risk for an outbreak, their sequestration from the outside world, is the very thing keeping them safe. Also ironic, the fear about what trouble the coronavirus might cause inside of a prison is, like the disease itself, largely coming from the outside. SCDC spokeswoman Christy Shane says the department fields regular calls from inmates' families wanting to know more about what's happening on the other side of those walls. Sterling says he'd like families to know that the department is worried about the inmates, too.
It's perfectly understandable why people would be concerned, but we are doing everything we can to mitigate that, and family members should know that we are doing literally everything we can to try to keep their loved ones that are incarcerated safe and keep our own employees safe.
Some groups, including the American Civil Liberties Union, argue that the best way to keep higher-risk inmates with less time left on their sentences safe would be to release them. The ACLU recently sent a letter to Governor Henry McMaster's office asking for early release for some inmates. But whether that would work or not, it can't happen in South Carolina.
The governor only has authority to commute a death sentence to life. That's all the law allows.
Sterling says one thing that is helping is that police agencies and courts are sending fewer inmates to jail right now. What was a flow of 40 or 50 new prisoners brought in per day has slowed to a handful. New inmates are being processed at only two facilities before they're allowed into the general population, men at Kirkland Correctional and women at Camille Correctional.
Thanks, Scott, and to all of our South Carolina Public Radio reporters for keeping the airwaves full of informative stories. Now this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world, guys. We want to know. Things are changing. Are you a medical professional on the front lines? Are you working at a grocery store? We talked to a recent grocery store employee. Are you essential or non-essential? And what do you think about that? A lot of people have concerns about that. We talked to one of them in our podcast today. And you can tell me at 803-563-7169. And again, if you're new to the Lead Podcast, welcome. We're glad you're here. We're dedicated to y'all. These episodes are our new norm. And with that, we include this wind down section, which features me and my producer, A.T. Shire, talking because we want to maybe put a smile on your face, give you a break from all the heavy news in each episode, and let you focus on something else for a minute. Now, that being said, let's share one unpopular opinion today, A.T. You got that? You ready?
I'm filled. I'm filled with I know. Hot takes.
And
so.
I hope you give me a new one because I'm used to it. But here's mine. Okay, September 6, 2014. Do you know what happened on that day, A.T.?
2014?
September 6, 2014.
I have no idea. Yeah, let's get into this.
A lot of people don't remember that date, but you remember what happened. The Apple iWatch debuted, and U2's album Songs of Innocence showed up on your Apple devices.
I remember this garbage. Yeah, let's go.
And you know what? I was okay with it.
No!
I'm a U2 fan. I don't care.
It was awful. I still have that on my iTunes.
Because
I can't get rid of it.
I researched it. You couldn't delete it immediately. It didn't let you immediately delete it. 33 million downloads did not immediately download.
I still can't. Delete. It's still there. I can't get rid of it. It's still on my digital fingerprint.
Well, later on, Bono, they were thinking this was going to be this great way. You know, they had these good intentions. Apple and U2 said, you know, we want to put it out there and give it to everybody. So it's like free music, whatever, living. But obviously, that's not how it was interpreted. Everyone got really freaked out by it. And then Bono eventually told Rolling Stone, if you don't want it, just delete it, you know. So the Washington Post called it rock and roll as dystopian junk mail. I mean, that's just...
I think it's just junk mail. Don't give it any more gravitas than Bono's giving himself constantly.
I mean,
God,
I like you too. I'm just gonna leave it there. That's it. That's an unpopular opinion. That's an unpopular opinion by itself.
Just the worst band.
I have fond memories of you too.
Okay. Not the worst band.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty worse. All right, what's your
hot take? I'll tell you the one you've probably heard it. I mean, you definitely have. But this is the one that gets the most people our age riled up. Mm. And it's that I think Harry Potter is a terrible book and movie series. And it's the only reason it's popular is because it's the last thing that everyone our age read. Because, like, it's about magic high school. And I'm like, I don't want to read about high school.
Yeah. And he has, like, all that money. Like, I get it. His parents are gone. That sucks, you know, traumatically. But... you know, and he had a horrible upbringing, you know, that sucked too, living under the stairs and such, but,
he's just terrible.
Chosen one and all the angst that comes with it, you know.
I think they're just not very good books.
Oh.
And people give me grief for it, and I read five of those books, okay? And every single time someone was like, when I say someone, I mean my brother, he would always say, oh, but the next one's the good one, and it never was. It was still bad.
Oh, that sounds like my brother talking about Homeland, which... You fooled me for three seasons. I stopped. Okay. Open next season. No.
Come on. The only Claire Danes I need is My So-Called Life, right? Come on. Come on, baby.
I've never seen it.
You got one more thing to talk about, right?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of books and fast books to read, because, you know, you can go through those Harry Potter books. I know you didn't, but I went through them pretty quick. New York Times had a great little post that you can read in our show notes at scetv.org/sclead for this episode. And one of the books they said that you can, quote, read in a day or really quick was Annihilation. And that's a book we both love. We both strongly endorse.
We love it. Love it. Love it.
It's part one of the Southern Reach trilogy. Really great stuff. Again, if you don't want to read the book, which, you know, I know we're all indifferent to reading sometimes, you can also watch the movie with Natalie Portman. You know,
which is way different, though. Way different.
Who doesn't love Natalie Portman? If that's your unpopular opinion, keep it to yourself because we don't want to
hear
it. You know,
not here for it. We don't want that.
We like Natalie Portman, okay? Highly recommend. Very interesting stuff. But another book on that list was Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. Have you read that book?
No.
Oh, it's really great. I mean, it's speedy. It's sharp. Agatha Christie... a genius, my opinion.
Whiz, bang, boom, through the book. You love it.
$3 on Kindle, 300 pages, boom, boom.
$300.
$300, three pages, Kindle.
It's nothing to us. We make so much money from this podcast.
I mean, my God. Yeah, speaking of which, where's my stimulus check? Weesh.
The other easiest book to read is Infinite Jest. We all know that. Bring it up all the time.
Oh, I have so many notes. That's the next pod. Never read it. I will say, just with your Harry Potter really quick, since we're leaving, I'm going to be on a Zoom happy hour this evening. And our new thing is doing like random presentations. This is like what you do for fun, I guess. And last week I did one on the Happy Meal because I found it on mentalfloss.com. I just stole an article and made a presentation. This week we're doing a presentation on all things Harry Potter. So I will include your opinion. But I'm gonna do. I think I'm gonna do mine since this will air afterwards on Harry Potter fan fiction.
Oh, because I like I know a steamy
nothing,
fanfic.
I know nothing about it, but I'm very interested, and God knows what it,
I like
God
a steamy fanfic
in store for
Ron
me.
Ron and Harry belong together. Okay, I'm saying it. You're thinking it. We're all thinking it.
Tell us what you're thinking. What you're reading. What are your unpopular opinions? Please enlighten us, and tell us how things are going as well. 803-563-7169. I might need to start prodding some of our old guests to tune in. And I'm actually thinking about having everyone on a Zoom call next week to catch up on primary buzz. So a lot coming next week, too. So again, tune in then. And you can keep up with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. They're out there, too. Get in the news to keep you informed. Once you get your fill of news, however, take a break. Take a break from it. You can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for the latest. And I'll let you know if the governor's holding a press conference that day, which is always carried on SCETV and South Carolina Public Radio stations, usually around 4:30. We're here for you, our lead community, throughout this week and as this situation continues to develop. We are in full-scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.